Welcome to the Divided Kingdom. This is Elizabeth Cuppett Caverly, and Lou Caverly and I tonight are coming to you in the brand new year, January 4th, 2018. It hardly seems possible, but so much has been happening, and we do really want to thank all of our listeners. We heard from some of you during the Christmas season, and thank you for the lovely letters of encouragement and a few contributions. And if any others would like to help us stay on the air, remember, we don't have commercials, and we are totally independent. No big or little foundations of any type. No deep state behind us. If you would like to help us, you can write to Lou, capital L-O-U, Caverly, capital C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, capital B-E-T-H-L-E-H-E-M, Maryland, 21609. And again, that P.O. Box is 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And as we go into the new year, we're going to report a little bit on the situation with what President Trump and Melania Trump have done during the holiday season. And of course, we still have this terrific satanic backlash. Even as I came to the microphone, I heard something about a new book, Fire and Fury, and they're descending to such a juvenile level in this book that they're claiming that Donald Trump never even thought about becoming president. He never took it seriously. And that the night of the election, Melania Trump cried tears, not of joy, but of a lot of angst and sorrow. So they're going to try to pick at anything possible to harm the image of this first family. And I said to Lou that if we were in any other era, back in the 50s, the 60s, whenever, in any other political regime, Melania Trump would be looked upon certainly like a Jacqueline Kennedy. And I would like to report, just because I love things aesthetic and I love things that the Bible says are true and lovely, we're supposed to look at those things. And Michael Kranz had a little article about the Trump White House ready for Christmas, and this was on December 24th, and the official theme was time-honored traditions. Lou, don't you think that says something right there?
Yes, after an administration that wanted change, 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 usually in our eyes for the worst, and minimize Christmas, didn't even want to call it Christmas, wanted to call it just the holidays so as not to offend other groups. This is a warm, welcome change.
And we know that it isn't just one previous administration. We've heard those stories about the Clinton Christmases, something about red items, things, maybe they were sickles and hammers. I don't really remember at this point, but there were absolute Marxist things. People saw these things. People realized that they wanted to sell our country out, but time-honored traditions is not a sellout. So this year, the official Christmas tree stood tall in the White House Blue Room, and it was decorated with the seals of every U.S. state and territory. And Melania spent a lot of time constructing wreaths with children in the East Room. And the White House Nativity set, the creche, was also framed by some more Christmas trees next to President George Washington's portrait in the East Room. The East Wing also features the Gold Star family tree, honoring families of people serving in the military. So, you know, we could go on about the gingerbread White House in the state dining room. We could talk about the thousands of volunteers who assisted the staff members for months to deck the halls at the White House. In the green room, there were silhouettes of past presidents appearing in a garland above a fireplace. And there was a tree in the grand foyer in the cross hall that had a glass ballerina, and that was a nod to the Nutcracker Suite. Again, these time-honored traditions. So when we look at Melania Trump, we just would like to see her smile. We would like to let her know that there are many, 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 many millions of people who admire and like her. And again, we hear this kind of an NPR written Langley script that comes out everywhere, even on WBJC, which is supposed to be an independent music station for classical music in Baltimore. More and more, it's just becoming like NPR, and we hear all these little catty things against Trump day after day after day after day. And we're really getting tired of this in our culture. You know, a lot of things are going to turn a lot of people off. I talked about the fashion magazines. And again, I got another InStyle magazine. And in the front, we had somebody from Delaware saying, oh, he or she loved this article the last time on Joe Biden, the one that we talked about. And yes, where are these stories coming out about these people who have preyed on women? Why isn't Joe Biden mentioned when all of this evidence is there? Everything is selective, practically all of it. But a little truth is getting through. Some ordinary people, even in a very liberal, I should say leftist, pro-Antifa newspaper near us, this was an ordinary citizen who wrote in. Let's not even use his name. His first name was Bob. Lou, let's just hear what an ordinary American thinks. But before he does that, I have to say that all this nattering from WBJC's script, of course, courtesy of Deep State, talked about these people in the foothills of Appalachia, who are still the Trump supporters. Now, you and I know that's very condescending. In other words, they're trying to have you picture these hillbillies down somewhere in the heart of Kentucky or somewhere, and they're sitting there with their corn cob pipes and their rotted teeth on a porch that's breaking down. Yes, I came from a little town in the foothills of the Alleghenies, and I have pictures of my grandfather and grandmother sitting on one of those rotting porches. But that same grandfather worked in a bank. He was a choir director. He did many, many things for Jesus Christ, and he had refinement, too. So, you know, poverty doesn't always indicate you have no class. No. The people who are in the pedophile rings at the top of the elite, that's far from class. And we are going to keep this program going as long as the Lord calls us to do it. And we want the elite to know there are a lot of people like this ordinary man who wrote in who is not fooled by all of this Russian collusion business. Here it is, Lou.
This essay by Bob illustrates what millions of decent Americans think, entitled Collusion, Probe a Witch Hunt. It looks as if the mainstream media has really pulled the wool over the eyes of Mr. Fauntleroy. It is a blessing that we have Fox News to offset the continual fake news, lying, that we get on a daily basis from the other news media. President Trump has been right from day one. Robert Mueller has had close to a full year and has yet to come up with any proof of Russian collusion between Putin and our president. It has been nothing more than the witch hunt that Mr. Trump labeled it. In fact, there seems to be some evidence that the only collusion that has existed has been between the Democrats and Russia. I think any reasonable person would conclude that there is really no possible way Russia could ever influence our election. How many people can anyone tell us that Russia entered their heads and told them how to vote? I have not heard of one. The whole story sounds like a fairy tale dreamed up by some six-year-old. When the Democrats are accusing President Trump of this collusion, how come they do not tell us more about what kind of collusion took place when they got cozy with Russia and sold 20% of our uranium to Russia? They claim that Russia is our enemy, and then they sell our uranium to them. However, that has not been the first time that Democrats have been real cozy with our enemy. Former President Obama would ship an aircraft load of cash to Iran whenever they felt they needed it, in order to pretend to fulfill their part of a peace agreement. It seems to me the only real mystery here is why the president is taking so long to fire Robert Mueller. At some point, I suspect those members of the general public that are capable of facing reality will demand that this man stop wasting taxpayer money on something that never has existed. How many years does this man intend to investigate something that came to a dead end a long time ago? To say that our FBI is a disaster is the understatement of the day. One of the main problems here is that our president has taken far too long to dump more of the Obama holdovers, and he lacks those in the higher positions that will be loyal to the new administration, while keeping those that are still loyal to the Democratic Party. He should have fired James Comey an hour after being sworn into office. I think he is only keeping Mueller on because he is well aware of the fact that Mueller is only making himself look more like a fool as each day passes, and he enjoys watching this just as much as some of us do. There also is no logical reason why President Trump should not act civil to Vladimir Putin. This man has done nothing to harm us, and in the long run, he may be a big help to us in our problems with North Korea and our efforts to end ISIS. We have nothing to gain by constantly being down on the leader of a country simply because the Democrats want us to believe that leader interfered with our elections, when we cannot even describe how they interfered.
And again, that's an ordinary citizen's viewpoint. So you see, people are waking up in this country, and they do realize that something is wrong, that there's this constant barrage against the First Family and no respect for the office. We had journalist Mark Shields, January 2nd, he had this headline, "A Sore Winner President," and he went on and on and on in his sickening column about the fact that his little thing that he was postulating was that, quote, "Trump seeks to distract the public from the negative news net coverage of his administration and appointees." And he says that he's doing this by constantly tweeting about what the Justice Department is going to do about the fact that totally crooked Hillary deleted and acid washed 33,000 emails. Well, we would like to agree with Trump. Why isn't something going on? You see, some of these people, some of these journalists are too stupid to even pick things that don't make you get even more suspicious. They're on a losing path. And, of course, we know that it's going to be very difficult for President Trump to stand forth with nationalism and with some of the wonderful things he's already done, for instance, taking us out of the Paris Climate Treaty, taking us out of TPP, yes, for our sovereignty. These are wonderful things, but the deep state is still there, and the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned about is always trying to do something bad. We've talked on this program before that we had an actual AP article that documented that the West went into Georgia. I believe it was in 2007. They went in first. Russia did not invade first into South Ossetia. No. Russia just went in to defend what were always traditionally their enclaves. It would be like Kim Jong-un coming over here and taking Puerto Rico. Okay, the U.S. wouldn't stand still and not do something about it. So just the same, Vladimir Putin had a right to go in there to South Ossetia and to defend his borders of his country. So the same with the Ukraine. We know that the NATO forces went in there, the Soros money and John McCain's influence, a lot of other rabid leftists here in this country who really want to sell out our country. They were part of this changeover in Ukraine. So now, guess what we have the deep state doing? Here's an editorial, December 31st, 2017, and this came from the Jacksonville Daily News. The State Department says the U.S. will provide Ukraine with, quote, enhanced defensive capabilities, end quote, to protect itself against Russia-backed separatists in eastern Ukraine. What this means, according to news reports, is that the U.S. is finally prepared to help Ukraine's military punch back in a murky conflict cooked up by Putin. American weapons going to Ukraine will include Javelin anti-tank missiles and sniper rifles. And again, this propaganda article goes on to say that Putin is a scheming villain responsible for splintering Ukraine, etc., etc. In 2014, he waltzed into Crimea. There is no better verb to describe his actions. No, we're tired of these lies. We're tired of having our country suck all of our young military-age men out overseas into more than 160 countries now, I believe it is. We're tired of this scenario. We don't want to be under the UN. We want our freedom. And then we also have to be concerned with another editorial, and this one was again from the Jacksonville Daily News, and this tells us that the U.S. and Baghdad are stepping up talks about maintaining a U.S. military presence in the country. USA Today recently reported this. It's not known how large an American contingent would be involved, but its role would likely mirror that of U.S. troops in the bid to defeat Islamic State, advising Iraqi commanders and providing surveillance and intelligence help. James Jeffrey, a former U.S. ambassador to Iraq and now a foreign affairs analyst, told USA Today that the new contingent probably would be smaller than the current force of 5,500 soldiers. Quote, keeping American boots on the ground in a part of the world as unstable as Iraq is never an easy decision, but it behooves both Iraq and the U.S. to hammer out a deal. Yes, maybe. This editorial claims that an American military intelligence presence is needed in Iraq to ferret out and neutralize whatever Islamic State is up to. Perhaps under Obama, we were actually using the CIA and other parts of our government to build ISIS. So what are we doing? Is this going counter to what Donald Trump's vision for America First should be? We really have to watch this situation. We don't know, but we do applaud him when he's trying to help our country progress economically and to help get rid of these elements that we talked about in December, the Weathermen Reborn, the Antifa, people who are really paid saboteurs to take down our country. And again, we heard at the very beginning of the Amtrak, quote, accident, we heard that something was obstructing the tracks. And then we heard on Alex Jones that actually Antifa had put up something, I think it was on Facebook, and then they hurry removed it. They were advising their people to obstruct railway lines that had to do with transporting fracking things and oil. But that disappeared quickly, and they were to pour cement on these places. Now, what we began to hear later in all of the mainstream news reports was that the train had been going 80 miles per hour in a 30-mile zone. We never again heard about any obstructions. Wherever you are out there in the heartland of America, you need to keep your eyes open. You need to say something when you see something, but you don't call the FBI. You don't call the CIA. You probably call Alex Jones. You probably get it out on the Internet yourself. You tell your neighbors, so that we know we're under a siege. Lou and I are not doing this for our health. We probably have had pneumonia again, and we weren't sure we could do this broadcast, but I knew it's time. We must draw your attention again to these things, and you must stay as well as you can. When summer comes, if you're living under smart meters, I hope that you heard Deborah Tavares' emergency broadcast. It will be in our archives soon. If you didn't hear that, you need to think about getting off the grid, using solar, do anything so that you're not under this system that has been documented by various neuroscientists as harming your DNA. just standing in front of those meters a short while, your blood vessels clump and get irregular. Look on the internet for Take Back Your Power, a very powerful DVD that Dr. Stan Monteith carried in the year 2014, I believe, and that's when we got it. Yes, you must try to stay well, not eat the GMO foods, not be where you have fluoridated water. You must stay well because each generation is getting weaker, and they want it this way. And I really appeal to you to pray for some of these elite, like Bill Gates. He now says he's involved in fighting Alzheimer's because there's some family connection. And we heard Deborah Tavares say his name, that he might be connected with the chemtrailing or operations. But we also know a long time ago, he didn't want to go in with the elite when he was an earlier founder of Microsoft. And they bent his arm that he would have to do certain things to join their, quote, club. I think that some of these people still have a soul that can be reached. I think some of the young Rockefellers, perhaps Jay Rockefeller, perhaps his lovely wife Sharon, who had a twin sister who was murdered, these people have suffered things like the ordinary people have, and they are responsible for wonderful colonial Williamsburg. I appeal to some of that younger generation of Rockefellers to shut the doors on Cold Spring Harbor, to stop the silent wars and the weapons. What is it, Lou? I don't have the term quite right with my cold. You can't remember either. It's silent weapons, silent wars. We don't have this slogan, but if you heard Deborah, you don't have to have the exact slogan. You see it every day above you, with all of the chemtrails, all of it. Now, we see that Trump is going to be meeting, I believe, at Camp David soon with Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan to map out the 2018 legislative agenda. And we have a very big triumph here, I think. 50-plus year Washington political commentator, he syndicated, Donald Lambro, weighed in on December 31st, 2017.
What a year this has been. While it's been a bumpy ride for the Trump administration, lurching from one controversy to another, it ended with a big tax cut victory in Congress that could help Republicans survive the challenging 2018 midterm elections. The U.S. economy is finally soaring as a result of the tax rate reductions, breaking out of the anemic 2% growth rate of the Obama years that prevented America from achieving its fullest economic potential. Throughout his two terms, President Obama was best known for cherry-picking economic statistics in an attempt to prove the economy was getting stronger. But year after year, the polls consistently showed that a weak economy, fewer jobs, a shrinking labor force, and declining incomes remain the nation's top concerns. But the ink was barely dry on the GOP's tax reform bill and its corporate, business, and individual tax cuts when the economy began growing again at 3.2% rate in the third quarter, and more than likely, the fourth quarter, too. The liberal news media still weren't buying it, believing that the corporate tax cuts will end up enriching business fat cats and CEOs. Quote, are you living in a fantasy world? Unquote. NBC's Savannah Guthrie asked House Speaker Paul Ryan on the Today Show. He wasn't. Writes Andrew Wilford, an Investor's Business Daily, quote, CEOs have an incentive to maximize profit and value for shareholders. This means investing in a high-quality workforce, which is why only 3% of the workers are paid the minimum wage. Tax reform will increase after-tax incomes for businesses, allowing them to invest more in their workers. This is why the White House estimates that corporate tax rates will result in an increase to average after-tax worker incomes of $4,000, he explains. Under the tax overhaul, businesses, quote, would be able to immediately deduct the entire value of capital investments. Since businesses value money up front that they can reinvest, they have a strong incentive to invest in new equipment now while this full expensing policy is in place, says Wolford, a policy analyst at the National Taxpayers Union. This is why a string of big corporations are announcing bonuses for their workers. AT&T is giving $1,000 to some 200,000 of its workers and pledging an added $1 billion in capital investment. Similar announcements soon followed from Boeing, Bancor, and Wells Fargo. Pro-growth advocates like the Club for Growth believe that the GOP's tax cuts will unleash a tidal wave of great economic growth and prosperity. But David McIntosh, president of the Club for Growth, believes, quote, there's no reason to wait another 30 years to enact additional reform. In fact, with respect to the individual and major pass-through businesses, this bill falls far short of pro-growth expectations, he says. Among his proposals, enacting a real, and this is in quotes, a real 25% maximum rate for businesses organized as subchapter S corporations or LLCs, rather than artificial exclusions for sectors like financial services and unfairly excluding 80% of business income from the pass-through rate, unquote. Also, making the temporary tax cuts permanent for individuals, abolishing the death tax on estates, repealing the alternative minimum tax, lowering the capital gains tax rates to boost investment in the economy, repealing the Obamacare taxes. All of these additional tax changes, or even some of them, will significantly accelerate economic growth in the years to come and bring in much higher tax revenues to dramatically shrink the government's monstrous debt. If the Republicans can pass additional pro-growth tax reforms next year and beyond, the political payoff in 2018 could be historic. A booming economy, growing job market, and rising incomes, including a declining budget deficit, would result in a GOP landslide election next November. And that could lift Trump's approval polls to record highs. But he has a long way to go before that can become an achievable political reality. First, he needs to hit the road to talk up the growing economy, take credit for signing the tax cuts, and begin to discuss the next tax cut chapter in his party's agenda. Trump's off to a good start, though. The Conference Board, a business research index, reported this week that consumer confidence was just slightly below its 17-year high set in November. Consumer expectations are now at historically strong levels, suggesting economic growth will continue well into 2018, said the board's director of economic indicators, Lynn Franco. Obama's economic failures are behind us, and the Trump economy is taking off.
Spiritually, too, there was an interesting article by Franklin Graham, I believe. This talks about him. The White House Christmas tree lighting has become an increasingly secular affair in recent years, even given the holiday that it's supposed to celebrate. And why not? After all, the Obama administration did everything in its power to avoid uttering the very word Christmas, much less celebrating what this season really meant. Yes, here we are. December 1st, Facebook post. This was Franklin Graham, and this is what he said. Never in my lifetime have we had a president willing to take a strong, outspoken stand for the Christian faith like President Donald J. Trump has, Graham wrote. Whether you are Protestant, Evangelical, Orthodox, Catholic, all Christians need to get behind him with our prayers. Trending, fact check, no, Trump isn't destroying national monuments. Graham then embedded a video of President Trump's speech at the tree lighting, which sounded markedly different than anything you were used to hearing from President Obama. Take a look. For Christians, this is a holy season, the celebration of the birth of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, Trump said. The Christmas story begins 2,000 years ago with a mother, a father, their baby son, and the most extraordinary gift of all, the gift of God's love for all of humanity. Whatever our beliefs, we know that the birth of Jesus Christ and the story of this incredible life forever changed the course of human history, the president continued. There's hardly an aspect of our lives today that his life has not touched, art, music, culture, law, and our respect for the sacred dignity of every person everywhere in the world. Each and every year at Christmas time, we recognize that the real spirit of Christmas is not what we have. It's about who we are. Each one of us is a child of God. That is the true source of joy this time of the year. That is what makes every Christmas merry. Wonderful words. And, of course, there might be mixed feelings about the legacy of Billy Graham, who has turned 99. We have read books that criticized his, perhaps, some deep state connections, some things we're not too certain about. But we really have great admiration for Franklin Graham. We have never heard that there was anything but a lot of sincerity, hard work, and we remember True News talking about wherever they went at, in a disaster area, there was Samaritan's Purse, and they were already helping the people. So that we really do want to commend Franklin Graham also on his strong stand against the radical Islam. He has a lot of courage. And what I was going to refer to was Decision Magazine, which is the Billy Graham publication. I happened to see a picture there, I believe, of when Billy Graham was celebrating his 90th birthday, and there beside him was Donald Trump. And I told Lou, if there was ever a loving, gentle face with an angelic look about it, it was Donald Trump. We're all human. We're all sinners. We all have ugly faults about us. But, you know, who are we to judge whether Donald Trump is saved? Perhaps he is saved. Anita Dittman, the Holocaust survivor who is still alive, and we must soon bring her programs back to you, the unforgettable interviews that she gave me a few years ago. She's still doing her mission work in Minnesota. She's still talking about those Hitlerian years. And we need never forget what lies in the background. Al Cuppet isn't right out the floor right now telling about some of the hidden military equipment in Maryland in the mountains. He's not talking about the foreign police cars being here, but they are here. He's not telling you again about those camps, but those camps are here. God has given us a reprieve with Donald Trump. He really and truly has, and he's waiting to see whether the pastors and the Christians in this country will wake up and say no more abortion. And we don't advocate same-sex marriage. We don't bring clergy into our churches who are in same-sex marriages. God is waiting to see what will happen. And you might think that we have a tiny voice here. Maybe we do, and it used to upset me a lot. I wanted to stay on GCN. I wanted to get bigger and better and bigger. But I finally submitted my life and this work. Lou and I both have submitted this to the Lord Jesus Christ because we have been disillusioned. We found out a lot of things. A lot of these other programs, they're backed by other people that we don't want to be backed by. And we also know that even one of the very best news-telling organizations, when we heard that pastor rail one night, the Jews rule the world, and when he rewrote the book of Revelation saying that saints wouldn't come back with Jesus and rule for 1,000 years, there was some kind of a kingdom ruling now. How could we have ever wanted to join that organization, which at one time I thought we did? We have to have integrity. My grandmother sitting on that porch near New Paris, Pennsylvania, looked worn out. She had almost 10 children, and her daughters all died. There was one who had my very name. I can go to the cemetery and see my name, Phoebe Elizabeth Cuppet. In the early 1900s, I believe that she did precede my father because my father was the last child born when my grandmother was about 43. But you see, God had a plan. The first Phoebe Elizabeth wasn't going to make it, but but this one did. This one made it far enough, even though Satan tried to destroy me. My goodness, Lyme disease, lupus, all kinds of things. Lou watched a lot of assaults. Lou was assaulted plenty. But I still recall standing there in his bachelor apartment looking at those books, those wonderful history books, when I saw that sort of a nice golden light and that wonderful feeling in my heart and soul. And it was like just reading the words, not really hearing a voice. This is your destiny. Yes, we're here. And the main reason we're here, I think, is to reach those of you who love Jesus Christ and will pray. This is the main reason we need prayer warriors, to maintain the reprieve we've been gained, that we have gained through the Lord's mercy. And we need prayer for people like Dan and Donna Holman out there trying to save those babies one by one in front of Planned Parenthood. We need lots of action. We need people to wake up more and more. And at the same time, we do want to help you in your lives. And now we must move on to something very important.
Since 2014, Elizabeth Cuppert Cavalier and I have been reporting to Divided Kingdom listeners on the evidence for a big world climate change. No, not a global warming. Instead, as scientist author John Casey presents in his book, Cold Sun, dramatic record-breaking cold for the last few years indicates we may be returning to a small ice age period.
The sun, not CO2, determines our climate. And this was an article by Edmund Kantosky, and he's a noted lecturer on urban planning, international monetary issues, and he was a former director of planning for an internationally renowned environmental consulting firm. And this article came out December 29, 2016. And we're going to give you part of this. It's very important. And then today, we're going to try to bring you up to date with all of this, too. And here we are. A chart clearly shows a weakening trend of sunspots in solar cycles 22, 23, and 24. These are the latest in a sequence dating from 1755, when extensive recording of solar sunspot activity began. Note that the peak of solar cycle 24, which occurred in 2014, is only about half of that of solar cycle 22, which peaked about 1989. This portends global cooling, not global warming. Sunspots are dwindling to lows not seen in 200 years. In 2008, during the solar minimum of cycle 23, there were 266 days with no sunspots. This is considered a very deep solar minimum.
A recent picture of the sun shows a single sunspot region as the sun marches toward a cyclical low expected in 2019 or 2020. Sunspots have been observed for millennia, first in China, and with a telescope for the first time by Galileo in 1610. We now have about a 400-year record of sunspot cycle observations, from which we can see a cycle length of about 11 years. Combining this fact with the discovery of a strong correlation between solar activity and radiocarbon-14 in tree rings, it has been possible to backdate sunspot cycles from the sun's magnetic cycles for 1,000 years, back to the Oort minimum in the year 1010. Sunspots occur when magnetic fields rip through the sun's surface, producing holes in the sun's corona, solar flares, coronal mass ejections, and changes in the solar wind, the stream of charged particles emanating from the sun. The solar wind, by modulating the galactic cosmic rays which reach the Earth, determines both the formation of clouds and the carbon dioxide level in the Earth's atmosphere, which has nothing to do with the emissions from factories or automobiles. This is why in the 15 years prior to 2013, when humans produced 461 billion tons of carbon dioxide, compared to only 302 billion tons in the preceding 15 years, there was no global warming. In fact, the Earth actually cooled, despite the massive increase in carbon dioxide emissions. The fearmongers claim a doubling of atmospheric carbon dioxide will produce catastrophic global warming. But Reed Bryson, founding chairman of the Department of Meteorology at the University of Wisconsin, has stated, quote, "You can go outside and spit and have the same effect as a doubling of carbon dioxide," unquote. After about 210 years, sunspot cycles crash, that's in quotes, crash, or almost entirely die out, and the Earth can cool dramatically. These unusually cold periods last several decades. Of greatest concern to us is the Mondo Minimum, which ran from 1645 to 1715. A chart shows the paucity of sunspots during this time. Some years had no sunspots at all. Von Brody's biography of Mormon founder Joseph Smith recounts the harsh threats to human existence during the Dalton Minimum years. And in the famous year of 1816, often called the Year Without a Summer, Von Brody describes what happened to the Smith family, which had a profound effect upon the founder, Joseph Smith Jr. And I don't have the book in front of me, so I'll just paraphrase it. In that year, known in Vermont local history as 1800 and froze to death, Joseph Smith Sr., the Mormon prophet's father, had moved to Vermont and then over to New Hampshire, then back to Vermont. And in 1816, and for several years prior to that, the crops were so poor that finally he just totally gave up and moved to New York State. And the interesting thing is, in Palmyra, New York, or near there, is where Joseph Smith Jr. later claimed to have found the golden plates from which he translated what he called the Book of Mormon.
Perhaps Lou will bring that quote to the air at a later time. Also, we saw some satellite observed temperatures. Just very quickly recap this, Lou.
Yes, very interesting graph. On the horizontal axis, it gives the years from 1996 to 2014. And on the vertical axis, it gives a record of the sunspot activity, or actually the global temperatures. And all you see is a bunch of up and down zigzags, which have no discernible pattern. There is no sign of any change. And in fact, the caption for the graphs reads, "Satellite observed temperatures, 1996 to 2016, where's the global warming?"
Now, we have to realize that these periods of very low solar activity, they're called minimums because, you see, there's a minimum of sunspot activity. And so we had the Dalton Minimum, and that was there from 1790 to 1830. And so that was the period that included that year without the summer, 1816, and also there was a volcanic eruption of Mount Tambora that played a role in that. But the main thing here is the activity of the sun, and the other minimum was called the Maunder, capital M-A-U-N-D-E-R minimum, and that was from the years 1645 to 1715. So now, I think it's very important to know that they think that we may be going into something pretty soon. Just to recap this very quickly before we read it to you, within 10 years of now, we might be in the heart of the beginning of this really, really cold, cold thing that was like the time of the Maunder Minimum when, guess what, the entire River Thames froze over in England. So this article now appeared July 13, 2015 by Beck Crewe, a new model that predicts the solar cycles more accurately than ever before, has suggested that solar magnetic activity will drop by 60% between 2030 and 2040, which means in just 15 years' time, Earth could sink into what researchers are calling a mini ice age. Such low solar activity has not been seen since the last mini ice age, called the Maunder Minimum, which plunged the Northern Hemisphere in particular into a series of bitterly cold winters between 1645 and 1715. The prediction is based on what's known as the sun's 11-year heartbeat. The sun's magnetic activity is not the same year in, year out. It fluctuates over a cycle that lasts between 10 and 12 years. Ever since this was discovered 172 years ago, scientists have struggled to predict what each cycle will look like. Now remember, this article was July 2015. Last week, at the National Astronomy Meeting in Wales, mathematics professor Valentina Zarkova from Northumbria University in the UK has presented a new model that can forecast what these solar cycles will look like based on the dynamo effects at play in two layers of the sun. Zarkova says she can predict their influence with an accuracy of 97%. What exactly are these so-called dynamo effects? They're part of a geophysical theory that explains how the motion of Earth's outer core moves conducting material, such as liquid iron, across a weak magnetic field to create an electric current. This electric current also interacts with the fluid motion below the surface of Earth to create two magnetic fields along the axis of its rotation. When Zarkova's model applied this theory to the sun, it drew its predictions assuming that there are dynamo effects in two subterranean layers, one deep down in the convection zone and another up near the surface, each fluctuating between the northern and southern hemispheres. Zarkova explained at the conference, "We found magnetic wave components appearing in pairs, originating in two different layers in the sun's interior. They both have a frequency of approximately 11 years, although this frequency is slightly different and they are offset in time. Combining both waves together and comparing to real data for the current solar cycle, we found that our prediction showed an accuracy of 97%. Looking at these magnetic wave patterns, the model predicted that there would be few sunspots over the next two 11-year heartbeats called cycle 25, which peaks in 2022, and cycle 26, which runs from 2030 to 2040. In cycle 26, and again that's 2030 to 2040, the two waves exactly mirror each other, peaking at the same time, but in opposite hemispheres of the sun. Their interaction will be disruptive, or they will nearly cancel each other. We predict that this will lead to the properties of a Maunder minimum, said Zarkova. During the original Maunder minimum, the entire River Thames froze in England, so I guess time to get your skates ready. We've commented before that, and you know we're over 50 years old, back when I lived in western Pennsylvania in those foothills of the Alleghenies, our weather never went below zero. Lou, you were near Beverly, Massachusetts. Did yours?
I don't ever remember the temperature going below zero. And the forecast this week is to go, the last time I checked in the Weather Channel, it said Beverly, Massachusetts was going to go down to 8 below zero. That's quite a change.
And we've been watching this vortex, this polar vortex, and we saw them pour boiling water into the air on Mount Washington and immediately froze. And we have a couple of articles. We'll see how far we can get with this. This was Fortune.com, January 2nd, Chris Morris. The massive cold snap that is covering much of the country could ruin some people's vacation plans. Three Florida theme parks in the Orlando area plan to shut down as Central Florida experiences frigid conditions and braces for possible snow flurries later this week. While the Magic Kingdom, Epcot, and Hollywood Studios remain open, Disney plans to close its Typhoon Lagoon Park through at least Thursday. That could be extended if temperatures don't warm up. Blizzard Beach, the other Disney aquatic theme park, is already closed for renovations. SeaWorld, meanwhile, is shutting down Aquatica through Thursday, and Universal Orlando plans to close Volcano Bay through Friday. The shutdown of the water parks isn't a huge surprise, given that Florida has a cold front stalled over the state and is expecting low temperatures near freezing through midweek and highs in the low 50s. None of the closures are expected to have significant impact on the earnings of any affected park. We have other articles. There was one from NPR that talked about the record-breaking cold, and now we have one from the Washington Post, January 3rd. Jason, same now. Lou will give you some of this.
It's entitled Bomb Cyclone to Blast East Coast Before Polar Vortex Uncorks Tremendous Cold Late This Week. This story, first published Tuesday afternoon, is fully updated Wednesday morning. Unforgiving cold has punished the eastern third of the United States for the past 10 days, but the most severe winter weather yet will assault the area late this week. First, a monster storm will hammer the East Coast from North Florida to Maine with ice and snow. By Thursday, the exploding storm will, in many ways, resemble a winter hurricane, battering easternmost New England with potentially damaging winds in addition to blinding snow. Blizzard warnings have been issued for the Virginia Tidewater region and eastern Massachusetts and Maine, and could be extended to other portions along the eastern seaboard under winter storm warnings. This rapidly intensifying East Coast storm will produce strong, damaging winds, possibly resulting in downed trees, power outages, and coastal flooding, the National Weather Service tweeted Wednesday morning. Forecasters are expecting the storm to become a, quote, bomb cyclone, unquote, because its pressure is predicted to fall so fast, an indicator of explosive strengthening. The storm could rank as the most intense over the waters east of New England in decades at this time of year. National Weather Service Hurricane Hunter aircraft are even flying into the storm to gather data and refine the forecast, given the possible severe impacts in coastal areas. In the storm's wake, the mother lode of numbing cold will crash south, likely to be the last but most bitter and brutal blast since Christmas Eve in the Northeast. The responsible storm is forecast to begin taking shape off the coast of Florida on Wednesday, unloading hazardous snow and ice in highly unusual locations not accustomed to such weather. It's then expected to rapidly intensify, buffeting the mid-Atlantic beaches and eastern New England. The Weather Service office serving northeast Florida and southeast Georgia warned of a heavy mix of freezing rain, sleet, and snow through Wednesday afternoon. Quote, power outages and tree damage are likely to be due to the ice, unquote, it said. Also, a quotation, travel will be dangerous and nearly impossible, unquote. In Tallahassee, it was snowing for the first time in 28 years Wednesday morning. Meteorologist Eric Fisher, based in Boston, called the forecast bananagrams for northern Florida. If this verifies an unreal event for this part of the country, he tweeted. Ice and more than 3 inches of snow could fall in Savannah, which would make history. Tweeted Greg Diamond, a meteorologist at the Weather Channel, quote, in almost 150 years of record-keeping, the snowiest day in Savannah is only 3.6 inches, unquote. In Charleston, 2 to 4 inches of snow and ice is forecast Wednesday. Quote, travel conditions are rapidly becoming dangerous, the Weather Service tweeted Wednesday morning. Numerous accidents being reported and many bridges are being closed. Travel is not advised. The Weather Service Storm Prediction Center issued a rare alert for, quote, heavy freezing rain, unquote, along the entire South Carolina coast Wednesday morning. From Norfolk to Maryland and Delaware beaches, at least 5 to 8 inches of snow is predicted, with as much as a foot possible between Wednesday evening and Thursday afternoon. Especially in the Virginia Tidewater region under the blizzard warning, the combination of wind gusts up to 50 miles an hour and heavy snow could cause whiteout conditions. It is only the second blizzard warning for the Virginia Tidewater since the 1980s. Farther inland in the mid-Atlantic near Interstate 95, up to an inch of snow could fall in Washington and Baltimore, but more in the eastern and southeastern suburbs, where several inches are predicted. To the north, Philadelphia expects 1 to 3 inches of snow, while New York City is forecast to receive at least 6 inches late Wednesday night through Thursday. East of Philadelphia and New York, predicted snow amounts and wind speeds increase. Atlantic City is expecting 4 to 6 inches, with wind gusts 45 miles per hour, while eastern Long Island may endure 6 to 10 inches of snow and 50 mile per hour gusts. Specific amounts up and down the coast will depend on the exact storm track. If the storm tracks closer to the coast, snow amounts and peak wind gusts will be higher and extend farther west. If the storm wobbles east, snow amounts as well as peak winds will decrease. the time the storm reaches the ocean waters off eastern New England on Thursday, it will have explosively intensified and become a more severe storm. Its central pressure will have fallen around 50 millibars in just 24 hours, an astonishing rate of strengthening. Some computer models are predicting a minimum central air pressure below 950 millibars at its peak.
So we're going to have to be watching the rest of this whole winter. NPR had reported some things about the cold temperatures. And this was January 2nd, NPR. Aberdeen, South Dakota broke a 99-year record when the temperature dropped to minus 32 degrees Fahrenheit, the AP reports. The wire service continues. In Nebraska, temperatures hit 15 below zero, minus 26 Celsius, before midnight Sunday in Omaha, breaking a record low dating to 1884. Omaha officials cited the forecast in postponing the 18th annual New Year's Eve fireworks spectacular that draws around 30,000 people. It was colder in Des Moines, Iowa, where city officials closed a downtown outdoor ice skating plaza and said it couldn't reopen until the city emerged from sub-zero temperatures. The temperature hit 20 below zero early Monday, with the wind chill dipping to negative 31 degrees. The Weather Service said temperatures in Indianapolis early Tuesday tied a record low of minus 12 degrees Fahrenheit, minus 24 degrees Celsius, for January 2nd, set in 1887. In northeastern Montana, the wind chill readings dipped as low as minus 58, and in Duluth, Minnesota, a city known for its bitter cold winters, the wind chill dipped to 36 below zero. So we can see, it appears to us to be an actual trend, and we have talked before that in our long decades here in Maryland, the early years in the summer, there was not a breath of relief from the humidity, but the last 2 to 3 years have been different. It began to seem in some days a little like western Pennsylvania. There would be a breeze. It would be a little lessening, and people here said, gee, I wonder why we have such great weather, and you know, we could realize this was far from typical, and we think it's becoming a pattern. That's what we're going to have to watch for, and we will need each other as a culture, as a society. We will really all have to band together. If this thing's going to be coming almost to its peak in 10 years, the next years are going to gradually be getting more and more bitter cold. We hope that we are providing some important information to all of you, and you can hear us on Liberty Works Radio Network, that's LWRN.net, on Mondays at 5 p.m., repeating at 11 p.m., that's LWRN.net. There's an app for smartphones. You can hear us on WWCR, Worldwide Shortwave, going out all over the world. You can hear us on 4.840 megahertz Thursday evenings at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. And again, that's 4.840 megahertz. And, of course, on the Internet with WWCR.com. You can pick us up on the satellite going into Europe. We thank Global Star Communications, we thank WWCR, and we thank Liberty Works Radio Network. We thank, most of all, Jesus Christ for being our Savior, for giving us our own individual lives, giving us our family members who are entrusted to us, even when sometimes that entrusting involves sorrow and trial. God is always faithful if we give our lives to Him. It's been a pleasure to come to you, and thank you again for being our friends and writing to us and supporting us with your prayers. Happy New Year. Good night.